are back, and hopefully our sound is good, because we just realized the reason our sound is fucked up on the last episode. On the Craigslist killer is because our microphone settings had changed, which they shouldn't, because they should be a default.
So basically, we just recorded directly on our computer instead of on our bougie little microphone system we have happening here in our Scarlett Focusrite box. With our bougie microphones, not actually, I don't know. It's bougier than our last setup, but where we were sharing one microphone.
So anyway, apologize for the sound on the last one, because I think it was a good episode, but the sound was super fucked up and I had to keep fucking with it while I was editing it. So apologies, but we figured it out. So the sound will be better on this one. So hopefully this episode is also great, and I'm sure it will be, because this episode is going to be brought to you by Daphne King.
That's me.
It is you.
And I'm not even telling Mom what it is until we get to the very last second before we have to get into the
case.
Before we have to get into the case today, man. All right, what you got? What's your disturbing fact, woman?
Oh, fuck, okay. I'm ready for this.
Sure you are.
So this is going to be touching back on something that we've already touched on.
Great.
But it's a different...
Oh, update. Mm. Sorry, for touchback sake.
For touchdown. Oh man, it's all coming full circle now too, because I just realized that we're recording through the fucking computer instead of on our microphones. So when I was editing and I go and I took that out, like you could still hear it, like I didn't even take it out. So that makes sense now, because basically we're just recording into, like, if you were recording on your fucking telephone on your cellular device. Yeah.
No, this was my full circle moment back around when you said we've already kind of touched on this disturbing fact. I did not, in fact, pee in a jar and let it sit. So that didn't happen. I'm sorry. I don't have an update there for anyone.
Thank God.
Yeah, I got majorly scolded when we were done recording. So that didn't happen.
Was that your update?
That was the update.
Oh, okay. Because you were going to update about... But you'd have to let it sit for a real long time.
Yeah, well, I think it's been a real long time since we recorded that
episode. Because
we've kind of been crazy and hectic around life.
No way.
Us? Never.
Never. Okay, are you ready? So it's a touchback. Not a full touchback, but a semi-touchback.
Okay, is that like a three-pointer instead of like a full 7 points?
No, a touchback is like...
Or that's a 6 point instead of the full 7. There we go.
Yeah, no. That's, different. All different things. Anyway, so what we're going to talk
Football.
About...
Football.
What we're going to talk about is the oral hygiene of the ancient Romans.
Great.
So the ancient Romans
I'm were... concerned.
Yeah, you should be. So the ancient Romans were really concerned with oral hygiene. And having good breath and like brushing their teeth and doing all of the things so that they would have good oral hygiene. And as it so happens, when they dig up, when they find these ancient Roman burial grounds or whatever the fuck they are, they're not burial grounds, but like when they find these old emperors and shit that have been, and just general people in general.
Yeah, their tombs.
Yeah, 2/3 of them are not missing one single tooth.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Okay, give me their routine right now.
Well, you're not going to want to do it. Trust me.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem. I already have really fucked up teeth.
You don't. You have beautiful teeth. I mean, it cost me a fortune.
Exactly. That's the point. But my teeth cost a lot of money to become as lovely and gorgeous as they are today.
Right.
So my teeth are not actually fucked up as we sit here and speak today. But man, am I anal retentive about my oral hygiene.
Yes, you are. Which is great, because you should be.
Everyone should be. I have a lot of money in my mouth.
Well, and everyone should be, because, you know, when you have bacteria in your mouth, it goes into your bloodstream and it can cause major health issues.
Yeah.
It's not just having a yucca mouth. It's also having
a yucca body. Circular system.
Yeah. Circular system?
Circulatory.
Like, where's my hula hoop? I need a circular system.
Whatever. We know Daphne doesn't words. Daphne doesn't brain. Daphne doesn't English. We already know all of these things.
You do all of those things, just not so great some of the time. You definitely brain. You're a brain. It's the talking part that's different.
I'm a brain.
Okay.
I'm a brain, everyone. I'm a brain.
I'm going to get to it.
Okay. Talk. Speak.
So the ancient Romans had a unique and meticulous approach to their oral hygiene with toothpaste recipes that had obviously some unconventional ingredients. And so what they used for like pumicey to like get the plaque off their teeth, they used like powdered charcoal.
Well, that's not that bad. People use charcoal to like white in their teeth. Continue.
Animal bones and oyster shells.
That doesn't sound that horrible to me. I'm willing to do this.
And they also used dried up crushed mouse brains.
Nope.
That's where I draw the line. That's what I figured. And because they believed that increased toothpaste's effectiveness. And the most peculiar ingredient, we're going to get back to this, was urine.
I knew that's where you were going. But
get this. They didn't even use their own fucking urine. They got urine imported in large quantities, so like barrels of urine from fucking Portugal.
What the fuck's the point of that?
I don't know, but it's
fancy. I feel like if anybody's pee is going in my mouth, I prefer it to be my own.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like it's super bougie. They're talking to each other and they're like, oh, Caesar, I'm getting my urine imported from Portugal today. It'll be here on the ship.
Yes.
At some time.
All right, Hades.
Yes. Yeah. So
tell me more about this, Persephone.
I like it. So
I don't even know if Persephone's a Roman name.
I don't know.
I was just trying to think of like mythology names.
Cleopatra, Caesar.
Cleopatra is fucking Egyptian.
Oh, yeah, that's my bad. Okay. Well,
what the hell? That was a terrible misassociation in your brain.
Yeah, it was. You're not Miss, wrong.
I can't do anything. I can't play the name game because all of the terrible associations. That's what we were talking about, one of our dog's eye colors, and we said Amber Burst, and my mom's like, nope, that's too close to Amber Heard. We can't do that. Too close to Amber Heard. She's crazy. We won't be doing that. I'm like, that is just pathetic. Amber Burst, like a starburst, like a sunburst, like burst, like pop a color, baby.
Yeah, I have a problem. I'll admit it.
You have a lot of problems. Yeah. So that's one of them.
That's one of the most minor ones, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that's the most we have to worry about in a day, we're pretty lucky.
Unfortunately, it isn't. So the imported urine was, you know, dried down or like evaporated down to ammonia. And they thought that...
So they can do their laundry with it too?
No, because they thought that it made a better mouth rinse for bad breath, and it worked as a tooth whitener.
Hmm.
And
curious.
Right.
And we'll follow up.
So they basically crushed up.
You totally just missed that.
What?
I said, I'm curious. I will follow up.
Gross. So they crushed up mouse brains, animal bones, charcoal.
Oyster shells.
They used some like herbs and spices. 11 of them. No, I'm just kidding.
11 of them to be exact. We have lemon. We have rosemary. There's some spearmint in there. Some rose. What else we got? We got some lavender.
We got your basic distilled down urine or evaporated down urine into ammonia, and then they would mix it with like honey to create a paste that they would then brush their teeth with.
Wow. But I mean, if it works.
Well, clearly 2/3 of them weren't missing any teeth. And back then, there were dentists, and they would still, I mean, I don't think they went to dental school, but maybe they did. I don't know. But they would still pull your tooth. Like if you had a rotten tooth, they would just pull it. And obviously there was no anesthetic or anything.
We know of. But there might have been some oral numbing things, like some topical numbs, but that won't help for a tooth removal.
No.
That just helps when you get the lidocaine shot.
Right. So there you go.
Huh. Yeah, that's... See, I feel like the animal bones, the oyster shells, the honey, those things I'm fine with. When it comes to the mouse brains and the pee, the evaporated urine, that's kind of where I draw the line, I think.
Okay. Well, that's solid. Although these days we can just purchase toothpaste.
Yeah, but I'm always looking for the next best thing.
I know, that's true. You fucking buy everything. You're like, oh, look at this. Oh, I saw this TikTok video.
I know, I'm the most influenced person.
Yeah, ever. She is. So if you're an influencer, you've influenced Daphne.
Yes, you absolutely have. I'm kind of pathetic.
It's pretty.
But guess what? Our new vacuum, it rocks.
We're going to have an intervention.
Pretty soon here, yeah, probably.
Probably, maybe.
Probably, baby should definitely happen.
Definitely.
My wallet also would like to have an intervention, right? With my TikTok shop purchases.
Like, oh my God, I got this on the TikTok shop. I'm like,
guess what?
What?
Most of the time, they're all pretty damn good.
Oh, that's true, because I got some skincare on you.
I got skincare, yes. And then I told you what it was, and you insisted that you take the bottle from me because you're older than I am, and it's anti-aging.
Just slightly older.
And then, yeah, that's where we wound up, is that I'm not, and then you stole it from me, and then I ordered two more bottles, and now, and then you were like, I put it on an auto ship, like, directly from their website, and I've been out for, like, 3 weeks and have yet to see another bottle.
Oh, I have two in my bathroom.
Okay, noted. I'll be needing one of those later.
Better both unopened.
Because my wrinkles are setting in again.
Oh my God, she's so ridiculous.
My fine lines. My crow's feet.
Crow's feet.
My under eye bags.
Oh God. Yeah, relatable.
All right. Wow, asshole.
I don't actually have under eye bags. You don't have under eye bags. I know I do because I'm old, as you've pointed
out. Okay, anyway, I literally titled this episode Surprise Mom because I didn't want to tell you what it was until right this second. And I also have in my notes in all caps, this is going to be a metal episode.
Sweet. Kim, do we get a pinata we can open beforehand?
Probably.
Okay.
Let me find a stick and I'll beat you with it.
I think I just want some candy.
Oh, gotcha. Because we're just talking about preserving your teeth. You're like, let me have a Butterfinger. Oh, that was another one of my TikTok shop influences was the chamoy pickle.
Ugh.
It was pretty good.
Gross.
But I could just see my fucking blood sugar spike after I took it. After I took it. After I ate it. All the fucking sugar on there. Like, you literally, like, dumped flavored sugar on there, too. But it was good.
It was so good. All right. Well, let's have the surprise.
Okay. Do you have a guess?
Well, no. I was going to try to throw something out there, but I don't.
Well, how about you throw a guess out there?
I don't know.
This is still not a visual podcast, but I'm definitely like raising my eyebrows, looking at my mom, like just fucking make a guess.
I don't know. If I'm supposed to be surprised, then maybe it's something about the mob or like 1920s or 30s.
Okay, so not 1920s or 30s, but the mob. You're on to something.
So like the 50s?
No, like not like the 50s either.
So like now?
Like no, last not week? Like now either. Like you're still missing like a giant fucking time period.
Okay, well.
You're like, how about the 20s or 30s? Doesn't include the 40s. And then beyond the 50s, it's like, no, fuck that time period. And then now? Nope.
Well, okay, so now we know what it is.
It's the mob.
Kind of. Okay, kind of.
Well, yeah, relation, yeah.
Oh, right.
Okay, where are we talking about John Gotti?
Oh, yeah, that's mafia.
Yeah, that's mob.
Yes.
Yeah, but like not just like the mob. I'm not like, oh my God, here's the history of the mob. Kind of. I don't know. I'll just present it to you now. How about that?
I love John Gotti. The Teflon Don. Although he died in prison.
Okay, thanks for fucking spoiling the whole episode. You guys can just turn it off now.
Sorry. I think everybody knows that.
Except for if you have no fucking clue who John Gotti is, like I didn't.
And you know why they called him the Teflon Don?
I do know. I'm going to go over that.
Okay, I'll just shut the fuck up.
I'll be over here. Good call. Yeah, you just shut the fuck up.
I'll be over here.
Because I'm really hoping that there's stuff in here that you've never heard before.
Oh, I'm sure there's a ton. Legitimately.
You're such a liar. Okay,
no,
he was
real.
Born October 27th, 1940.
I didn't know that.
In South Bronx, New York. He was the fifth of 13 children.
Fuck, that's a lot.
To his parents, J. Joseph and Fanny Gotti.
That's too many lots.
That's too many kids, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to say that in case any of our listeners have 13 kids.
Yeah,
it seems like a lot.
It seems like a lot of mouths to feed and a lot of asses to wipe and a lot of diapers to change.
And a lot of noise.
I hate changing my own diaper, so. You're welcome. That was funny.
Okay. Anyway. I'm so funny.
I've been really on it with the jokes for the last 2 days.
Oh, my God. What kind of music do bunnies like?
I don't know.
Hip hop.
Oh, that's good. That's funny. Oh, okay. Okay. I got one for you.
Okay.
How does a mermaid wash her fins?
Shoot. I don't know. Clear.
Tide.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
I thought you would like that one. What do you say when you've lost 25% of your roof?
Fuck.
Oof.
Oof.
I say
oof all the time. Okay.
Okay, we're getting back to it. Sorry. Oh, but I figured out, because all I could find was that his dad's name was J. Joseph. His dad's name was definitely John Gotti, because then John Gotti would go on to have a son named John, and he would be John the Third. So his dad was definitely John Joseph Gotti, but they called him J. Joseph.
Not John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Not that. His parents were both Italian immigrants. His father worked as a day laborer, and this was the family's only source of income. And this money was obviously very unpredictable, right? Like, we're talking about 40s, 50s. And they moved around a lot.
What year was he born?
1940.
Okay.
And they moved around a lot, but they eventually would settle in East New York. And when he was 12, he began working as an errand boy for an underground club in the neighborhood ran by Carmine Fatico.
Okay.
And Carmine Fatico was a captain in the local Gambino crime family, which was the largest of the five organized crime families in New York, which is formerly known as the, you know, we spend our whole time trying to figure out how to say names, Mangiano family, Mangiano. I don't know, but it was that family before it was the Gambino, but we're going to dive more into that. And when he was working at the club, he met Anelio de la Crochet.
That sounds French.
De la Croce.
Now that's not French.
When I say it like that. Who became a lifelong mentor to him.
Cool.
Do you know that name?
No, I don't.
Okay, good. So there is going to be some stuff in here that you don't know.
Oh, I'm sure. I only know, like, because...
Don't tell me what you know.
No, I'm not going to tell you what I know, Travis.
Don't tell me what I know, Travis. We love Zootopia also.
So not to take away from what you're doing, because I'm really excited about what you're doing, but the mob stuff that I really know more about, and not even probably as much as I would like to, is like the older mob stuff. And so the only stuff that I know about John Gotti is the stuff that was happening, like relevant to when I was growing up, and stuff on the news and People magazine and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I know, which would be scratching the surface, probably, to say the least, and also a bunch of bullshit, probably, because it's the media.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
But not to take away from it. But
I try not to look at any actually, like, media sources. I just try to look at, like, actual, like, good sources, okay. Like the FBI's website and, like, all kind, like, those kinds of websites, you know?
Yeah.
Not, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, reliable sources?
Yeah, not, like, People magazine.
Yeah, credible sources.
Yeah. Or how we always talk about Wikipedia and how it's, like, a jumping off point and how you can find a lot of things.
Oh, I didn't even source any Wikipedia for this.
There was one episode that I was trying to find stuff and, like, because Wikipedia is a lot of times a good jumping off place to find other things.
Right.
Not that I
fact
go off,
check things.
Yeah. Not that I go off Wikipedia ever, but like how it has the numbers on things and then it, like, you click on it and it takes you to a newspaper article or it takes you to a court archive or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. There was one case and I can't remember what it was, but it was so full of shit. Everything that was in the Wikipedia was incorrect.
Wasn't it the one you just did? The Craigslist killer?
Probably.
I think it was.
I don't know. Time stands still and also goes fast.
I agree. Okay, so he soon became the leader of a gang called the Fulton Rockaway Boys.
Well, I like it. It makes me want to go.
Which were known for their robberies and carjackings. I agree. Some jazz hands up in here.
No, like a sock hop in my poodle skirt.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Oh, yeah.
They did jazz hands.
Okay.
When they danced?
I don't know.
When they, like, kicked out?
Sure.
They were doing stuff with their hands. When he was 14, his toes were crushed when he tried to steal a cement mixer.
How?
Which, why he would want a cement mixer, I'm not terribly sure. But this accident gave him, like, his trademark mobster gait. So he, like, forever had a limp.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at you. Sorry, because, wow. Ow.
Yeah.
He was crushed.
Yeah, crushed. Ugh. So, yeah, he, like, always had a limp, which was, like, his, like, signature kind of thing, I guess.
See, I didn't know he had a limp.
He was considered a bully and had a constant, like, discipline at Franklin K. Lane High School until he dropped out at the age of 16. And when he was 18, he was ranked by the police as, like, a low-level associate in the Fatico crew.
When he was 16?
When he was 18.
Oh, 18. Well, still.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's already on the police's radar for the Fatico crew, which is part of the Gambino family, right? Mm-hmm. Which one of their crews. And between 1957 and 1961, he was still being a petty criminal, and his arrest record included street fighting, public intoxication, car theft, which by the time he was 21, he was arrested 5 times and had already served some jail time.
Jeez.
At that point. And on March 16th, 1962, when he was 22, he married, wow, can't words tonight, sorry.
Tonight?
Ever. He married 17-year-old Victoria DiGiorgio, and they had already had their first child, Angela, and then Victoria was pregnant with their second child.
So she had a baby out of wedlock, and she was a teenager, and she married him, and then...
She's pregnant again, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
So in the early years of their marriage, they were always fighting, and they were, like, constantly getting separated.
Because they're too fucking young to be married, but they have kids, and it's the 60s, early 60s.
Yep.
And they're no doubt Catholic because they're Irish.
They're Italian.
Oh, my God. Okay. I know that they're not Irish. It's been a long weekish, too.
3-4. Yeah. It's been a long month.
Yeah.
So John, he was like trying his hardest not to be a criminal for the sake of the family.
Sure.
And worked as a presser in a coat factory.
But you can't make any money doing that. And then as an
assistant to a truck driver. Well, yeah.
How do you assist a truck driver?
I was wondering the exact same thing.
Do you find the map? Find them. And get his amphetamines so he doesn't fall asleep while he's on the road.
Yeah. He's like, shoot me up with that 5-hour energy.
Right? Sure. That's what it was.
Okay. So is that what it's called? 5-hour energy? Or did I totally just pull that out of my ass?
No, 5-hour energy. But I'm pretty sure that if you're using amphetamines to stay awake, you're not drinking 5-hour energy. You're probably doing speed amphetamines. Legit.
Yeah. Why can't you do both? Why can't you double down on that shit?
Of course you can. Why wouldn't you?
That's what I just said. Why can't you?
You can.
Okay, so this time of him not being a criminal was very brief. And he was jailed twice by 1966. And then he and his family moved to Ozone Park in Queens, which if this rings a bell for you at all, this is where Winston Mosley was from. Kitty Genovese's killer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where he came into the Gambino crime family, where he was a higher up in the hijacking crew. And so I'm going to break down a little bit about the Gambino family.
Okay.
One of New York's 5 families. The others are the Colombo, the Genovese, which if you remember from Kitty, her brother said that no, they were not in any kind of relation to that family. The Bonanno,
yeah.
And the Lucchese, yeah, that sounds better to me.
Mm-hmm.
They were all collectively
that sounds better because that's how you say it.
They were all collectively overseen by the commission. I'm putting commission in quotes,
right?
Formal meetings of the bosses where each of the 5 families would seek to like resolve issues under like whatever their like
whatever their
designated
code.
Honor code was.
Yeah, that their they code like of all conduct.
Upheld. Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, kind
of. Because there's not just like a lot of craziness happening. They definitely established their turf and their avenues of making money and that kind of thing. Like they had some agreements.
Yeah, they had some kind of terms for
although
sure.
But
there,
a lot
there's
of,
not really a lot of, well, at least for this episode, I didn't really dive too hard into that.
Well, good luck finding it because it's all top
no, there's
secret.
A lot of fucking information out there now.
Oh, stupid. I like it better when you don't know.
So the families and their inner workings were publicly revealed in 1963. When a mafia soldier testified at a congressional hearing, the heyday of the 5 families is confined to like roughly 4 decades from 1931 when Salvatore Maranzano and he like formed the consortium to 1970 when the United States passed the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act.
Okay.
So, you know, the families are obviously still out there. There's obviously still the crime families, but they're not like, I guess, like as powerful or they're mostly like working like in the shadows now.
I was going to say they're more covert.
Yeah, they're not
all flamboyant out there.
There's still shit about them today. Like when I was doing this case about like the Gambino family, like doing just a little bit more of a deep dive into the Gambino family, mm-hmm. which I decided I have a little bit more info to give just in general about the Gambino family. But I was like, I want to spend more episodes talking about these things, not like give all the information away in one.
Good job, Daph.
You know?
Yeah.
So Carlo Gambino was the head of the Gambino family. Oh, wow. I have from in my notes three times or from three times. From 1957 to 1976, with their major interests were in Brooklyn. And he was, his reputation, he was referred to as the bosses of bosses. Ooh. By the U.S. National Crime Syndicate.
Ooh.
Yeah, so on the radar again.
Yeah.
He was born in Sicily, and he immigrated to the United States in 1921 as a ship's stowaway, where he came to Brooklyn, and he became a gang member under the successively Joe the Boss, Salvatore Maranzano, Philip and Vincent Mangano. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I think it's Mangano.
And finally, in 1951, Albert Anastasia.
Mm-hmm.
Or Anastasia.
No, it's Anastasia.
I'm just never sure of the different pronunciations, because I know there's several different ways to pronounce that.
At least the way we have been taught in history.
Okay, gotcha.
Could be totally wrong.
So Carlo, he inherited leadership of the family, whose operations included gambling, loan sharking, hijacking, narcotics trafficking, and notably labor racketeering. And they had an extensive control over waterfront unions. And in the 50 years of crime, Carl Gambino only served 22 months in prison.
I like it.
From 1937 to 1938.
Don't be criminal.
And although he was indicted in 1970 for hijacking, and the U.S. Supreme Court also upheld an order for his deportation because of his illegal entry into the country.
Mm-hmm. He didn't. Yeah.
Well, he had a lot of heart attacks and stuff. So that like just deferred the trial and his deportation because he had to have medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in 1968. Sorry, I know I'm flip-flopping. There's going to be some flip-flopping, so pay attention. But I'm trying to keep it, like, all in order. And there's a lot of names, too, if you couldn't already tell.
Yes.
In 1968, John Gotti, we're back to him, served his first big sentence of 3 years when the FBI charged him and his two accomplices with committing cargo thefts near the JFK airport. Remember, he was, like, the head of... He was, like, making his way up in the hijacking crews.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, like, his first big job was... theft from JFK, and he got caught.
Okay.
While he was in jail, the Fatico crew moved from East New York to a storefront near John's home in Queens.
How convenient.
And their front was the Burgeon Hunt and Fish Club, which they played as like this, you know, it's a front. So they were like, oh, we're a nonprofit. But, you know, of course they're not.
Hmm.
And when John got out in 1971, he was designated as the temporary leader of the Faticos or the Burgeon Gang, while the Capo faced loan shark charges. Capo, captain, boss of not actually, no, we don't. Boss is not. Boss is the person who's overarching.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the underboss who's overarching over everyone under the boss.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the capos, captains of the like individual crews,
yeah,
who report directly to the underboss.
I love it.
And then the underboss reports directly to the boss.
I like it. It's so organized.
Hence why it's organized crime.
But it is. It's so organized. Like, you got to respect
that. It's fascinating. That's why, like, I don't know how he came on my radar one day. I don't know what I was doing. I was like, I don't know what I was doing, but I like heard the name and I was like, huh. I was like, I wonder what he did. Like it said, like, you know, we don't actually know how many people this person's killed. And I was like, what did he do? And then I was like, mobster, I'm doing this and I'm going to present it to my mom.
What? I love it.
So because we're talking about John Gotti, of course, as I said earlier, who was his mentor in life? Anelio de la Croce.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to talk about him.
Okay.
Anelio, or Neil, we'll call him Neil.
Okay.
Because that's what people called him. Was born March 15th, 1914, and was also a son of Italian immigrants. And he grew up in Little Italy. And he had one brother, Carmine, not to be mistaken with Carmine, who ran the Fatico crew, though. Not the same Carmine.
Okay.
He began doing petty crime at a young age when he was working as a butcher's assistant, but work became scarce and he found himself very attracted to the mafia. So Neil first studied the craft of organized crime, if you will, under the New York gangster Albert Anastasia, which he was the self-proclaimed executioner. Albert Anastasia was.
Mm-hmm.
He followed him into the Mangiano crime family, which later became the Gambino family, right?
Mm-hmm.
After Albert had a hit performed on the capo, Vincent Mangiano, where Vincent, he just, like, disappeared. And then he was presumed dead in 1951.
Hmm. Weird.
Yeah. They never said specifically if they knew who, like, actually carried out the hit, but of course it's assumed. And they, like, never found him. So in the early years of his career, he built a reputation as a clever and very brutal gangster. He was very well known for his intelligence and loyalty to the family.
Except for killing the dude who thought you wanted to take his spot.
No, that would be Albert had a hit performed on Vincent.
Oh, okay.
Talking about Neil.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Neil, he purchased the Ravenite Social Club in Little Italy, which became the Gambino's, like, social club later on. He was very loyal to Albert Anastasia, and he participated in several murders at Albert's request. And then on October 25th, 1957, his mentor, Albert Anastasia, was murdered by a gunman while sitting in his barber shop. And according to some people, the hit was organized by Carlo Gambino, who wanted to be the next Godfather, which Godfather boss, also same thing.
Okay. Right.
Those terms can be used synonymously.
Okay.
He wanted to be the next Godfather of the family. And he's the one, obviously, Gambino. And Anastasia is not a Mangiano. He's the one that he petitioned for that name to be changed to Gambino.
Okay.
So he got his wish. They changed it to the Gambino crime family. But as a traditional Cosa Nostra mobster, Neil, he was like remained with the mafia tradition and kept quiet when Albert was murdered, even though, you know, that was his mentor.
Right.
That he was his mentor. So he preferred to keep a very low profile in public due to his square-shaped face. And he was nicknamed Pollock, but no one was allowed, or Polak, I don't know. But no one was allowed to say that within an earshot of him. Otherwise,
was he Polish? Pissed. No, he was Italian.
They're all fucking Italian.
Well, yeah, because I'm like, why would they call him? Yeah, okay.
I don't know, but they did.
Maybe a Pollock fish or something?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. They're all fucking Italian.
Yeah. He married Lucille Riccardi, and they had two sons, Armand and Ronald, and a daughter named Shannon. So the family, they lived across from his club, but they later moved to Grasmere in Staten Island. And I just realized for like the last couple episodes, we've been in New York because the Craigslist killer, he traveled in New York. Mm-hmm. Did he live in New York?
He was born in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's why that was that connection in my
Cheryl,
brain.
In Cheryl, New York. Or he lived in Cheryl. I think he's born. Any hoodles.
Yeah. Sorry. No, I just was like, we've been there the last couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
He was also the great uncle of John Ruggiero Jr., Angelo Ruggiero, I don't know.
Ruggiero, I think.
Jr. and Salvatore Ruggiero Jr. All three were Gambino family associates. And Angelo worked.
Sorry, look on your face. They were associates.
Well, associates are low level.
Mm-hmm.
Or not low. They're probably not the lowest on the totem pole. But
probably not.
I don't actually know what the lowest on the totem pole would be, though. I guess that's an episode. That's a topic for another episode when we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We can figure out, like, the true organization of it. But I do know underboss speaks to the boss. The boss can also be referred to as the Godfather. And then under the underboss would be the captains and then the captain's associates. But by the time you get to the captains or the capos, they all break off into, like, their own branches.
Right. Their crews, who they're in charge of.
Yep.
Yeah.
To their own gangs.
Mm-hmm.
And Angelo, he worked under John Gotti in the Virgin Crew. In 1965, he was promoted to underboss, and he served as the underboss, and I'm air quoting, for the new Gambino family, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was good for him because he earned a nice living from illegal gambling and racketeering. And he was very clever as the underboss, and he would even, like, recruit lookalikes to lead police chases so he could, like, operate in the shadows. Like, smart as fuck.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah, he was super cool. He was a very religious man, and he once murdered a man who dressed up as a priest.
Ooh.
Because he was so religious.
Yeah, sacrilege. He's like, you're being sacrilegious, so...
Uh-huh. So he killed him.
Oof.
And he would dress as a priest himself, though, to avoid drawing attention to himself.
Okay, hypocrite much?
And he even got the nickname Father O'Neill. However, this didn't last long because everyone knew who he was when he was dressing up as the priest.
Gotcha.
So he wasn't afraid of the law at all. And one time he found two policemen taping him, and he allegedly forced them to eat the tape at gunpoint.
Ooh, that sounds...
badass.
Yeah, but I was trying to hold back on that.
Sounds like he's like a straight up motherfucker.
Yeah. And I feel like
he doesn't fuck around, basically.
I feel like if you're going to be in organized crime and, you know, live your life that way, that you shouldn't fear the law.
Yeah.
Because if you're always fearing the law, then I don't know. Like, I don't know how to say it.
You have to be fearless to live that kind of life.
Yes. I was going to say it's like a pussy thing to be like, oh, I'm so scared. Oh, I'm so scared. It's like you have to be smart and cautious so that you don't get caught, but not scared.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1966, he was present during a meeting in Queens with men such as Joseph Colombo, Carlo Gambino, and Carlos Marcello. I don't know. To discuss the distribution.
Probably cello. What do you think?
Thomas Luches.
Lucchese?
His rackets.
Luches.
Who was dying from poor health. Yeah. However, this meeting was raided by the police and they arrested 13 men, including Neil. And after a police officer said that they were all polite and acted as gentlemen and all had a lot of money on them. And this meeting was eventually coined the Little Appalachian. I don't know why I got that name.
Okay.
But that's what the meeting would later be like coined as. Mm-hmm. And NYPD detective Ralph Salerno. That was really hard to say. Sorry. It wasn't even that fucking hard to say. I just couldn't get it off my tongue.
You should have seen her face. Like she had peanut butter on the roof of her mouth.
I for sure did. So that the only mobsters whose eyes frightened him were Neil's and Carmine Galante. I don't know how you say it. So he was very popular in Hollywood. And with that culture, he still managed to, like, remain under the radar of law enforcement-ish. But in 1971, he was summoned to appear before a grand jury, but he refused to answer any questions about the mafia. So he was cited for contempt, and he got 1 year in prison for this.
Okay.
And then
which is nothing given
everything that they've fucking done.
Right.
On May 2nd, 1972, he was indicted on federal tax evasion after he accepted 22,500 shares of Yankee Plastics Company stock in return for peace with the labor force that he controlled.
I'm like,
and in 1973, he was sentenced to 5 years in prison. And then in May of 1973, John Gotti was still the capo of the Fatico crew, and he committed his first murder. So we're now, this is the point of us jumping back and forth between John and Neil.
Mm-hmm.
And other names. So Jimmy McBratney, who was a rival gang member who had kidnapped and murdered Emmanuel Gambino, who was the nephew of Carlo Gambino. Carlo ordered this hit.
Ooh, on his own nephew?
No, Jimmy McBratney, who kidnapped and murdered his nephew.
Oh, okay.
Carlo ordered the hit on him, which was John's first murder.
Okay, gotcha.
So on May 22nd of 1973, Jim McBratney, he ate at Snoopy's Bar and Grill in Staten Island. John Angelo Ruggiero, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Neil's nephew, mm-hmm. who also works under John.
Mm-hmm.
And Ralph Galone, I think that's how you say it. Anyway, they entered the bar, intending to have Jim leave the restaurant and head to the parking lot where he'd be executed. So John and Angelo pretended to be West Side criminals and mutual friends of Jim, and they struck up a conversation with him, and they persuaded him to leave with them. But then Ralph appeared, and he was like, I'm an NYPD officer. And he's like, I demand you surrender, only you, though, to Jim.
Uh-huh.
And then Jim was like, I don't know how true this is. He's like, your badge doesn't really look real. Like, you kind of look fake as fuck, like right. Insulting him, which then led Ralph to just shoot him right there in the bar.
Ooh.
And he was shot several more times as he was laying on the bar's floor.
Just for good measure.
For good measure. Oh, also, I forgot to mention, they were from a rival gang. They were from an Irish gang.
Well, I guessed from the last name. But it's kind of funny that he's like trying to pretend to be a cop and to get him outside or whatever, come with me. And then the dude's like, yeah, no, you're not a cop. Like, I know you're fake as fuck. And so he's like, well, fuck you. I'm not fucking fake. I'm going to fucking kill you. How dare you insult me by saying that I'm not who I'm pretending to be?
How dare you insult my honor?
Well, how dare you accuse me of faking something that I'm faking?
Right.
Yeah.
So Ralph was obviously clearly very sloppy in the handling of this hit.
Obviously.
Which would lead him to his own death.
Yeah.
Because he brought way too much attention to the family. So he was shot outside of his Brooklyn apartment in December of 1973.
So real close.
Yeah. Just a few months later.
Yeah. They're like, dude, you're a loose cannon.
Yeah, basically.
You got to go.
So Jimmy's murder obviously wasn't discreet. And there were multiple eyewitnesses. Because
it was right in Snoopy's.
Yeah, right? It was right inside of Snoopy's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just fucking kept getting shot while he's on the floor.
Right.
There were multiple witnesses, and then John was arrested in 1974 after several bystanders identified him in a photo lineup. And then he went to trial 3 years later, but he cut a deal with the court. He pled attempted manslaughter and served 4 years in prison for this.
Well, because he didn't really kill him.
Yeah, he didn't kill him.
Ralph did.
But he was conspiring.
Yeah, he was there and he maybe did a couple of the for good measures.
Yeah, probably. No.
Probably maybe not.
No, I think it was all Ralph.
Okay, gotcha.
I think Ralph was the only one who actually killed him. Right. Well, actually shot at him.
Okay, gotcha.
So as Carlo Gambino aged and his health was declining, he had to figure out like who would replace him as the head of the family. And most of the family thought that it would be Neil because that was like his rightful heir, right? Like he's been the underboss, blah, 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 blah. But Carlo nominated his brother-in-law, Paul Castellano, instead. And Neil was so loyal that like he didn't do anything about the decision. He was, like, very fucking loyal. Even I would have been pissed. On October 15th, 1976, Carlo Gambino died, and Neil remained the underboss and inherited control of 10 of the 23 Gambino crews, which was a lot, obviously. And, you know, they, like, just resumed their traditional activities, if you will, of robbery and hijacking and extortion.
Well, and money rolls up.
Yeah.
So you're in charge of these crews, and when these crews do whatever they do, then the crews get paid, but you get paid too.
Yeah.
For just...
Yeah, but Carlo gave him the order to leave, gave Paul Castellano the order that, like, Neil needed to, like, stay in charge of, like, some of the factions.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he'd been so loyal.
Yeah. But with this control still under Neil, Paul, like, inadvertently created a competing faction, like, within the family. For those who were most loyal to Neil, who thought that he should have become the godfather of the crew.
Yeah, gotcha. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there were now essentially two families within the Gambino organization.
That can't be
with
good.
Neil at one end and Paul at the other. And at this point, like I said, like how there's kind of the two factions now.
Mm.
Now at this point, instead of having like a capo, I mean, John Gotti is still the capo of the Virgin crew, but now he's kind of Neil's underboss.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
It does make sense.
So Paul was known as a businessman and not a gangster, like at all. He wasn't a gangster. He was a businessman.
Okay.
And this really irritated the associates of the Gambino family.
Oh, because they want a gangster.
They want a gangster. They want someone who's going to know what to do, know how to lead them, know what to do. So Paul decided...
Kick ass and take names.
Yeah, basically. Paul decided to ban drug dealing within the family.
No, I feel like that's probably a pretty lucrative part of the...
Of the business?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Narcotics trafficking.
Yeah. And Neil's underlings were extremely irritated, including John Gotti, who was extremely successful in drug dealing.
Yeah. Yeah, drug dealers are successful as long as they don't get caught.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that part of
it. And especially if you're like...
that part of it. Yeah, definitely don't get caught if you're going to do that. But...
Well, and especially if you're like a high-level drug dealer. Like you're not on the fucking street corner selling $5 worth of rock. You're...
Yeah.
You know.
If you're part of... Like the cartel, their numbers,
yeah.
Or the mafia.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about right now. The Cosa Nostra.
Yeah.
Cosa Nostra, by the way, is Sicilian, like traditional mafia.
Gotcha.
So John idolized Neil for being a very traditional mafioso. But when Neil stood firm on Paul's decision to ban drugs, John listened because he was loyal to Neil. Was like, if Neil's, you know, accepting of this decision, then I guess I need to be accepting of this decision.
Begrudgingly.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, he like didn't keep it up, but there's some drama that happens around it later.
Oh, I'm sure. Because think of all the money you're losing.
Yeah. So... Neil went as far as warning his crew that if he found out that any one of them were dealing drugs, he would kill them himself.
Mm.
And that was Paul's order, too. Punishable penalty of death.
All right.
So one of John's associates was eventually arrested for heroin dealing.
Mm.
But Paul's suspicions fall under John and his close friend, Angelo Ruggiero. Remember?
Maybe. I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm just
spitballing.
Yeah. Well, I'm just speculating that maybe Paul thought that it was like it would bring too much attention to them. Like trafficking in narcotics is probably something, especially in this period of time where the DEA is on to you and there's more watching of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. But I could be totally fucking full of shit.
Well, I don't know why he made that decision. He just did.
Yeah, because it seems like something that would get you on the radar.
Oh, I was thinking that'd bring in a lot of dough.
Well, yeah, it totally would bring in a lot of dough, but it also would very much probably put you on the radar.
Yeah.
Like how we know about fucking Pablo Escobar and
John Gotti.
Yeah, John Gotti and
all these different people.
Yeah.
So at first, Neil went out of his way to protect John and Angelo from Paul. But when tapes from prosecutors revealed Angelo had been insulting Paul, ooh, Neil refused to turn the tapes over to the Gambino family head, to Paul, because he knew that Paul would kill Angelo.
Yeah.
So,
except for he's a businessman.
Yeah.
But I guess he's a mean businessman.
Well, now he's the fucking godfather, so now he's not a businessman now. I mean, yes, kind of, if you consider this business.
It is business.
Well, it is people's business. Yeah, I would say it's people's fucking form of life. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, he was like a traditional businessman, but now he's a godfather. So now he's, I guess, left all of his business schooling behind, and it's just...
His MBA is bye-bye.
His MBA went MBA.
And now he's like... Okay, I'm the shit now.
I don't have a good line tonight for that.
Okay.
So Neil also had some like shared feelings that like Angelo had of this distaste for Paul, even though like, you know, so in spite of his own sinister warnings earlier, Neil like didn't want to kill Angelo or John. So he also didn't want to start a war.
Well, because it's already split, right? Into two factions.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, because Neil has his people.
And right, his people thought that he should be in Paul's position.
Yeah, well, and he's running almost half the crews.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm assuming Paul probably isn't even directly running the other crews either.
Oh, no. There's other capos.
Yeah, well, no, but you know what I mean? Like, how he's the underboss but running. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure Paul's also, like, I don't think he has his hands very far in it.
Okay.
Or at least to my knowledge, like he's not as involved, but
he's not involved in the day to day stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Neil had a mediation to keep the Gambino family from like going into a civil war and Paul from murdering his own crew members, which seemed to work. And yeah, so they didn't go to civil war. They didn't kill each other.
Well, that's probably good.
So one of these tapes that, you know, Neil observed, Neil told Angelo, I've been trying to take your part with these tapes from the very, very beginning. Then all we got to do, we go roll it up and we go to war. Apparently, Neil had some pretty heavy feelings as well. Even though he's a very loyalist man.
Sounds like it.
But for John, did that even make sense? Did I even read that in English? I've been trying to take your part with these tapes from the very beginning, from the very, very beginning. Then all we got to do then, we go roll it up and go to war. Yeah, I did read that in English. It's fine. But for John, the case of these tapes was even more detrimental. He was recorded insulting Neil for some of his decisions.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh is right.
Even though John's very loyal to him, he's still talking shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I told him, Neil's not going to like this, a detective said to John upon prosecution. And it was the only time I've ever seen him look remorseful.
Aww.
Said that was from the detective. Mm-hmm. From this alone, it was evident of the fact that, you know, despite the gossip, John actually respected Neil. Mm-hmm. John really was loyal to Neil. And in turn, Neil, like, really respected John's potential. And so, like, he kept pushing the idea that John should take control of the crews. And Paul didn't obviously, like, share the same respect for John or, like, the same admiration or feelings of potential within him. Mm-hmm. So in 1977, Neil promoted John to the capo of the Virgin crew.
Okay.
So he was just a crew member. I'm sorry. He was just like a high up crew member. So now he's officially the capo.
Okay.
No, he was temporarily the capo while the person was in jail for loan shark business. Okay, now he's officially the capo. Okay. Sorry. And in 1980, Neil gave the go-ahead to have a hit on the Bonanno family's capos. Ooh. Alphonse in Delicato, Philip Giacolone, and Dominic Trinchera, who were fighting for the top spot after the Bonanno's boss, Philip Rostelli, was jailed.
So he put a hit out on all three of them?
Yeah, because they were, like, just doing too much. So, like, the Gambinos had developed a relationship with the Bananos. Mm-hmm. So they knew that the three capos were causing problems and bringing too much attention, mm-hmm. had to get killed to end all the problems. Well, so yeah. They did that.
How else would you solve that?
Yeah, right.
How do you solve a problem like Maria?
Take a hit out.
Times three.
Yeah, take a hit out, baby.
Clean house.
Yeah, exactly.
And let that be a lesson this to all
so
of you. This
is so fucked up. We're like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you do. And you sometimes you just got to clean house.
Yep. And let that be a lesson to the rest of you motherfuckers.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yep.
Because they're like, yeah, you guys are being too loud right now. Like, there's too much happening. There's too much attention. Mm-hmm. Like, calm the shit down.
That's the whole thing of it. It was all supposed to be, like, non-existent.
Well, yeah, of course. You know? Like, people, we should not know any of this information, but we do.
We should not, but we do. Thank goodness.
I know, right? Feeds the soul. Right. In March of 1980, 12-year-old Frank Gotti, John's son, he was hit by a car while he was on his bike. Hmm. The car was driven by their neighbor, John Favara, who claimed that Frank had steered his bike into the traffic.
Let me guess. Didn't end well for the neighbor.
So Frank's death was ruled an accident. But witnesses say that Victoria, John's wife, attacked John with a John Favara, not John Gotti, with a metal baseball bat. And this sent him to the hospital.
As one does when you fucking kill their child.
He didn't press charges against her.
Well, that was probably smart.
Yeah. And then according to witnesses, John Favara, he endured 4 months of death threats until July 28th, the day he was clubbed over the head and shoved into a van, and his body was never found. And the Gottis conveniently were on vacation in Florida at the time of their neighbor's disappearance, and they have no knowledge of his whereabouts.
Well, yeah, they're just fucking at Disney World.
Yeah, they're just in Orlando having fun.
Right.
Having a sick old time.
Right.
And yeah.
They're with the mouse.
Yeah, they're with the mouse. With the big mouse, that Mickey dude. But there are rumors that he was encased in cement or dissolved in a vat of acid. So no one shall ever know.
Those sound like solid disposal methods.
Yeah, unless you crack open the cement.
You have to find it first.
Yeah, that's fair. if it's in one of the streets of New York, tough luck.
Right.
In the early 80s, John started getting a lot of unwanted attention from Paul Castellano because he thought that John's $30,000 a night gambling habit was a liability.
Fuck.
And he also disapproved of his, like, really unpredictable behavior.
I don't even like to gamble $30.
I don't like to gamble at all.
Like, when we go to Blackhawk, which we, like, never do, I give myself, like, $20. Little than 30 grand.
Yeah, a night.
A night.
Fuck.
Yeah. You got some disposable income.
Yeah, you think?
So yeah, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So the FBI installed Title III wiretaps, mob informants, and undercover agents, like, in the clubs. And they were beginning to get clear insights into the Gambinos' hierarchy and activities and into other families as well. And they were building strong cases against them as, you know, criminal enterprises. Mm-hmm. And as Neil aged, this is when he was like, okay, now I need to find my own heir, which, surprise, surprise, he landed on John Gotti, right? Because he trusts him. He sees his potential. You know, he's really got his back. And then in 1985, Neil was diagnosed with lung cancer.
Aw, that's sad.
And he and the other leaders of the New York mob were indicted on March 28th, 1985, as a part of the Mafia Commission investigation. Mm-hmm. And this investigation was for racketeering, and other associates were indicted on heroin charges.
Ooh. Yeah.
Paul said no. Yeah. We know he's not a fan, and we know that anyone who in the mob is dealing drugs and busted, that the penalty is death. And John knew he was responsible for his crew. Mm-hmm. So he asked Neil, he's like, hey, can you go talk to Paul for me so I can smooth things over with him?
Right.
However, Neil would never make it to the court proceedings, and things between John and Paul would never be all right because Neil died on December 2nd, 1985 at the age of 71, his lung cancer.
That's sad.
I know. I love Neil.
R.I.P. Neil.
I know. I shouldn't say that about a bad guy, about a criminal, but, like, I love Neil.
You don't know that he's a bad guy. He's loyal to the people he should be loyal to.
I know. I think that's why I like him.
Right. Yeah.
He's just a murderer. It's fine.
But on some level,
he's just
level,
a criminal. It's fine, Mom. I'm in love with a criminal. Okay.
On some level, though,
dead
not
criminal.
Even on some level, but the respect that they have for each other and the family that they have and the way that they take care of each other, you have to respect that, regardless of whatever they're doing and how they're criminalizing.
Yeah.
And being criminals and doing bad shit. At the end of the day, they have each other's backs. And
there's some respect there.
They're loyal.
Yeah, there's some respect to be had for their loyalties.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the things that were said about Neil. This is a federal prosecutor. He likes to peer into a victim's face like some kind of dark angel at the moment of death.
Well, at least he's not like turning his back.
And one reporter said his eyes had no color, as if his soul were transparent. Weird.
Weird.
How do you have colorless eyes?
I don't know.
I feel like that's media hype.
One mob investigator said, De La Crochet was one of the scariest individuals I've ever met in my life. De La Crochet's eyes were like he didn't even have any eyes. Did you ever see The Children of the Damned? His eyes were so blue that they weren't even there. It was like nothing. It was like looking right through him. Like, that's kind of creepy. I have a friend's dog that's like that.
Sounds super intense.
Sorry, Maddie. We also don't know exactly how many people Neil killed. Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of a wrap on Neil.
Because snitches get stitches.
Yeah. Snitches get stitches. Yeah, exactly.
And wind up in ditches.
Uh-huh.
Bitches. Yeah.
Bitches. And then we gonna call the witches. We're going to cast a spell on your ass. Right? We ain't ever going to find you in this ditch, bitch. After Neil died, Paul appointed a new underboss. Guess who?
John Gotti.
Not John Gotti.
Ooh, okay. Let me think. Is it that nephew? Not his nephew.
No, we don't know. You don't actually know who this person is. We haven't even said this person's name
yet. Is it Ricky Ricardo?
I was just teasing you. But yeah, obviously it wasn't going to be John Gotti. When I said guess, did you really think he was going to make John Gotti the underboss?
No, because he doesn't like him.
He doesn't like him.
The way you said it was all like, guess what happened? Dun, dun, dun.
The obvious. He did not make him the underboss.
Okay.
Poor John. Okay, anyway, the new underboss was Thomas Bellotti, his former driver.
Oh, Paul Castellano's driver.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did know that. I did know that his driver became the underboss, but like I never heard of Neil. I never heard of that Neil dude.
That Neil dude? That Neil dude, Anelio De La Crochet?
I never heard of him.
Okay, well, that's your problem. I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate all of the whole story.
So he was buried at the St. John Cemetery in Queens, and nearly the entire Gambino family showed up, except Paul Castellano.
I was going to say, but not Paul.
Yeah.
What a douche.
So to John Gotti, he was like, this is the worst thing you could ever do. Like, yeah, not show up to your own underboss's funeral.
That's fucking super disrespectful.
Yeah. And so he was obviously pissed.
Talk
that
about
Neil
throwing
did
some major fucking shade.
Yeah. He was pissed that, like, he didn't show Neil the respect that deserved. I'm mad, too. I was mad when I read it. I was like, you should know better, Paul. You might be a businessman, but you're running mobsters here, dude.
Right? And like, not even
you're running hard people.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, oh, that's a major fucking disrespect. That is not cool. Because I'm literally telling you why I like them so much is because their level of fucking respect for each other. And you don't show up at his fucking funeral after everything he's fucking done for you. And he had your fucking back when he was making so much money in narcotics. And
yeah.
He said, no, 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 because Paul doesn't want to. Ooh.
Yeah, fucked up.
I'm fired fucking up.
I'm fired fucking up. A quote by Gam King of the Nine over some Gambino family drama.
Yeah, then well, I make it important if I'm going to be
December,
fired fucking up.
On December 16th, 1985, just 14 days after Neil died, Paul Castellano and his new underboss, Thomas Bellotti, they were walking outside of Spark Steakhouse in Manhattan, and they were assassinated by John's gunman.
I couldn't have seen that coming.
And John, he was watching from a car at a safe distance, and then
they did
a little drive-by just to make sure that, you know, his order was properly carried out.
To make sure he was dead?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say they did a little dance.
No, they did a little drive-by just to make sure, like, the job got done.
Yeah.
And then the next day, the FBI, remember, they're tapping. The next day, they had several high-ranking members from all of the mafia, from the five families, at the Ravenite Social Club. Remember, that's Neil's club,
mm-hmm.
The Gambino social spot, congratulating John as the new godfather.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
For real.
He's loyal as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to take care of everyone.
I mean, I knew he got assassinated and I knew his new underboss got assassinated, but I didn't know it was because of Neil because I never heard of Neil. I just thought it was like some war within the Gambino crime family. Well, I mean, that's
always how they do it, right? Like you take out your predecessor so you can be the next in line.
Yeah, or the predecessor dies and then you just get it out of respect, which is what should have happened with Neil.
With John, you mean? Oh, with Neil for the Carlo?
Yeah.
With Carlo?
Yes.
Yeah, but that was his brother-in-law, and he probably just didn't have that same respect because his loyalties lied with Albert Anastasia, not with Carlo Gambino. He just was still committed to the family. So, I mean, I think that one's kind of fair that he just was the underboss, and, you know, Carlo's like, nah, I don't want you. You can still be my underboss, but, you know, you're not going to be my next predecessor because... You know, you were Albert's guy. You weren't my guy.
Gotcha.
Even, I mean, he was his guy, but, you know, he was Albert's dude.
Right.
Kind of like Neil, kind of like John would have never fallen under Paul's wing.
Right.
It was always,
well, clearly,
it was always John and Neil.
Right.
Well, I mean, even if like he would have shown up, he probably would have never fallen in line for him. To the extent that he did, but you know what I mean? Like, there still would have been that, like, waging war, the factions.
Yeah, there would have been a rift.
Yeah. So remember, there was the trial before all the shit we just talked about that unfolded. Mm-hmm. So when the trial happened for racketeering and drug charges, John and his associates were acquitted, even though it later came out that the jury foreman fixed the verdict when John paid him $60,000. That juror was sentenced to 3 years in prison for obstruction of justice.
Oh, fuck.
This was all later, though, that they came out. Mm-hmm. And this led to John getting the nickname of Teflon Don. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain why?
Because they can't make any charges stick. Everything just fucking slides right off of him.
Yeah, after three trials in a row. Mm-hmm. Like three straight trials in the 80s for everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing ever stuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why he got Teflon
and
Don.
And have you seen pictures of him? Mm-hmm. How he just looks so fucking dapper and like...
Okay, well, he also got the nickname of Dapper Don in the media.
Oh, I forgot about that. But he does. He looks so fucking dapper.
You know how he actually got the name, though?
No.
It was his people under him that gave him the name. Because he always carried an extra suit on him that he would put on after lunch at trial because he always wanted to look like clean and pressed.
Oh, he's like Steve Harvey.
Yeah.
Like how the families will still be in the same clothes because they're filming three episodes in one day.
And he always changes outfits. Yeah.
Steve Harvey's in a different suit for every.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was him.
That's how we got
Dapper Don.
Yeah, because he always looks so super fucking put together.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah, all of his pictures. Yeah, he does. He looks dapper.
He looks
he's very put together, very like respectable high society man.
Right. Hashtag goals as I sit here with my fucking hair and
oh my God, I didn't even want to talk about all the dry shampoo in mine.
Anyway. I like never am put together. I always look all fucking disheveled.
Same. I have Matt. Well, this wasn't intentional, but I'm kind of matching today.
Yeah, but you were wearing that yesterday.
It's because all I did today was clean and do homework.
And you probably slept.
Only the shirt.
Because I came home from work and I'm like, huh, that's what I saw you in at 11:30 last night.
And the funny thing is that I've been sleeping in your room because you're not sleeping in your room so I can sleep with all the dogs. And these sweats were just on your floor one day. And I just felt them on.
That's because I wore them one time.
And they're my sweats.
I wore them.
You're trying to steal them. You can't steal them.
No, I don't want to steal them because they're kind of...
say, beautiful.
Yeah, they're great on you, but they're a little bit loud for my taste.
They're fucking new. They're fucking flesh toned.
No, but they have
bright fucking butterflies and words on them.
Nothing about these is bright. Look,
that's fucking bright.
There's nothing bright about these.
It's fucking fluorescent green.
That is not fluorescent green.
Okay, it's not fluorescent.
You need to get your eyes checked. This is not popping.
It's more popping than anything I would isn't. Wear.
Except for I think I was in the basement or something.
Are you kidding? I've seen your fucking bright ass pink fucking jacket that you like to wear. And one day you fucking wore it with pink pants. I was like, you've got to be shitting me, lady.
But they didn't have butterflies on them.
They would have been cooler if they did.
Okay,
bringing this back.
Okay. So by August of 1986, John had become like a local hero to everyone and icon in Howard Beach neighborhood, which is where his family lived. And he was so popular in the neighborhood, right? That his people is... fans, followers, friends, whoever, if you will, decorated three trees yellow after he was acquitted.
Why yellow?
I don't know what the significance of yellow is. I don't know what the significance of it is, but they did after he was acquitted. Like, were they celebration? I don't fucking know.
Well, have you ever heard that song, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree?
Maybe it had to do with that. I don't know.
I don't know. I just thought it was a cool random fact.
It is a cool random fact.
Although he narrowly escaped death... shortly after this, when people conspiring against him detonated a car that they thought he was riding in.
Oh, shit.
And instead, Frank DeChico, DeCiso?
DeChico.
I think it's DeChico. Then, who was the second in command of the Gambino crime family. So he was his underboss. He was John's underboss. Had just left a mob meeting in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, on a Sunday afternoon in 1986, and was opening his car door when a giant fucking explosion just killed him and injured another suspected mobster.
Oh, shit. But they thought John was in the car.
They thought John was in the car.
Or going to be in the car.
Yeah. So 9 years after the murder, a high-level mafia defector told law enforcement authorities that the intended victim of the bombing was John Gotti. And he had just been taken over the Gambino family, right? Mm-hmm. Just taken over, just gone to trial, just got acquitted, like all these things happening, right?
Right.
And that one of John's own capos or captains was involved in the plot to kill him. The killers either mistook Frank for John or they bombed the car in the belief that John would have been getting in it. And then federal and state investigators said the disclosures about the killing were made by Anthony S. Casso, something like that. Mm-hmm. The former underboss of the Lucchese.
Oh, good job.
Crime family. And that he identified Daniel Marino as the Gambino capo who betrayed John. Mm-hmm. The families, Anthony Casso told investigators, decided to kill John because he had engineered the slaying of Paul Castellano, the former boss, right, the former godfather, mm-hmm. in December of 1985 without obtaining approval from the commission.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Which, you know, we already talked about, that's the governing body, mm-hmm. their own little commission, yeah.
Yeah, it's their commission. Laws that they abide by.
Yeah.
And John didn't get permission to take out Paul. He just was like, you fucking disrespected my fucking dude, Neil.
Yeah.
You're dead.
You disrespected my person in the mob. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to fucking kill you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't go and get the votes.
Yeah. So the FBI obviously wasn't thrilled about the loss of the trial.
Go figure.
The 1985 trial that happened in 1986 where he got acquitted. Mm-hmm. So they later turned his conviction into an organizational crusade. And then he was arrested again in 1990, where he faced multiple charges with multiple counts of racketeering, extortion, jury tampering, and other crimes.
Okay.
And he reportedly told the officers when he was arrested, 3-1 odds I beat this case.
Ooh.
Yeah. Fucking ballsy. That's my guy. That's
cocky as fuck.
So the courts had incriminating wiretaps from the Ravenite Social Club, which those tapes led to the courts refusing bail for John this time.
Oh, that's not cool.
And it also meant the disqualification of two of John's favorite lawyers on the grounds. Mm. And the government argued that they were essentially a part of, like, the criminal organization.
That the lawyers were?
So they probably got disbarred, would be my guess.
I didn't
really dive too heavy into that. Yeah. But they might have gotten disbarred if they're...
But, man, you see that or hear about that all the fucking time.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, people have, like, fucking... I mean, yes, I get it. People have, like, retainers, but some people have them in, like, their pocket mm-hmm. for different shit.
Well, yeah, if somebody's paying you that kind of fucking money...
Well, that's, like, the fucking... I don't even want to dive into it. The people who defend criminals.
Well, it's their job.
Yeah, no, it is their job. Yeah. Robert Kardashian went to town for OJ. Mm-hmm. R.I.P.
Okay. Johnny Cochran.
Yeah, yeah. All of them.
All of them. But whatever. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. That's not what we're talking about today.
Nope, it is not.
So John was heard on the tapes criticizing Sammy Gravano, who was obviously feeling betrayed, and then Sammy ended up switching sides. And in the federal trial, he testified that John led the Gambino family and ordered the murders.
Sammy the Bull Gravano.
Yep, John's hitman and the Gambino family's underboss. So this is who John appointed to be the underboss after Frank was killed in the car bombing.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of Sammy the Bull?
I didn't dive too heavy into him, no. Mm. I've heard of him, but I didn't dive too heavy into him. Because I was trying to focus on John Gotti, and then that turned into Neil, and then it turned into a little bit of Paul, and a little bit of Carlo, and a little bit of Albert, and a little bit of everybody else. And so...
A little bit of Monica.
Yeah. What's that song? Pretty Girl by My Side. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the words.
Me either. I just... When you kept saying a little bit, I was like, ooh, a little bit of Monica.
I like had to think about it. I was like, what is that song? And at one point during the trial, between 800 to 1,000 supporters gathered outside the courthouse to show their support for him.
Damn.
Yeah. So he's like local famous man.
Yeah. That's how it happens.
But he's even famous like in Hollywood with Hollywood people too.
Yeah.
So... This time, the judge ordered that the jurors remained anonymous and they were identified only by numbers so no one could pressure them or pay them off.
Mm.
And on April 2nd, 1992, John Gotti was convicted on 13 counts, including the ordering of the murders of Paul and Thomas. Mm. So the head of the New York FBI office famously remarked, "The Don is covered with Velcro and every charge stuck."
They had a fucking solid ass case.
They did. They had a really fucking hard to break case there.
Well, and they didn't let him out. They didn't reveal anyone's identity, so there was no way to fucking pay people off. They got his fucking lawyers disqualified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had him.
I think it's a civil rights violation myself. And
being like fucking monitored 24/7.
Yeah, not even that, but like taking away all of your civil rights so you can't adequately present your own defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't.
You hearing me, Gotti family? You need to sue the state of New York.
Oh, they're still alive and well. A lot of
them are. For damages. I know. But sue them for damages for violating John Gotti's civil rights.
Yeah, I'm sure they probably already have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they have.
Anyway, I don't
know
why.
They're in the media a lot.
I don't know why I would make that statement, but I feel fine about it.
No, they're in the media like a lot, but I didn't include, I guess I can just give you a spoiler right now.
His daughter.
His granddaughter.
But his daughter too. Victoria Gotti.
That's his wife.
But he had a daughter named Victoria also. I'm pretty sure.
No, he didn't. It's his granddaughter.
Who's his daughter's? Because his daughter had, I don't know, any hoodles.
I don't think it's his daughter. I don't think her name's Victoria. I don't know. There's a whole fucking family tree website, but none of it seemed terribly reliable. But they're alive, so I didn't use any sources from the like their family tree thing.
Okay. I had to pause it for 1 second because I do have to look at something.
Okay, I was wrong. He does have a daughter named Victoria. I thought it was his granddaughter because I saw the whole like family tree thing.
No, it's okay.
But
and she was a TV personality, like a
he had five kids.
Reality TV personality. And then of course she wrote a book and or more than one book. And then I was a fucking huge ass fan of watching Mob Wives. Oh my God, did I love that show?
You did, you love that show so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that was my Desperate Housewives or not Desperate Housewives, my Real Housewives of every single county that I don't watch. But Mob Wives, I was so fucking...
That was your Bachelor. That was your fix.
I loved it. R.I.P. Big Ange.
I know. Is it still on?
No.
I didn't know.
No.
I didn't know if it was still on or not.
I might have to just go back and watch it.
I've never seen it, except for, like, with you a handful of times.
Well, you were, like, a kid.
But you also liked the Braxton Family Values that I do remember.
Yeah. Anyway, back to John Gotti.
Girl, you tripping. You too fat to be stripping.
That's the Ricky Lake show.
Oh. What's the thing that they said on Braxton Family Values?
I can't remember.
A lot of things.
A lot of things.
So he served at the federal prison in Marion, Illinois. Did I say
Marion?
Marion, fuck! Why does that name always just so happen to fucking appear?
Because
it's like before we started doing the podcast, like, shit, I never had to read that name out loud. It was never a name I ever had to fucking know. And then we started this goddamn podcast and it's like that name haunts me. And I can't ever say it. Marion, Illinois.
Marion.
Marion. In solitary confinement.
You should restart that sentence.
Okay, well, he was in federal prison in Illinois somewhere that I can't pronounce. And solitary confinement.
I think solitary confinement's not cool either.
I don't think so either.
Unless it's for your own protection.
He was, like, in there most of the time, I guess.
That sucks.
Well, John Gotti was still the boss of the Gambino family. It's estimated that he made more than $500 million in revenue for the entire organization from gambling, drug trafficking, extortion, and stock fraud, and that he personally made between $10 to $12 million during his reign as boss.
Hashtag goals.
I know, right? Like, how do I get involved with this?
And not get caught.
Yeah, there's that too.
Not go to prison.
I'll just be a wife.
Oh, but then it all gets taken away from you. And then they have mistresses and stuff. Anyway, just keep going.
That's fine with me.
Yeah, right.
As long as you don't bring me home anything.
Right. No STDs.
Except for pearls. Pearls and diamonds.
And money.
And Frenchies.
Aw.
And rag dolls. Cats. Not actual dolls, not like Raggedy Ann's. I'm good on that. In 1998, he was diagnosed with cancer and it was treated. And John appointed his oldest son, John III, as the acting boss of the Gambino family. And in 1999, his son pled guilty to racketeering charges and was sentenced to 6 years in prison. So John III said this about his dad. There was nothing he didn't like about it. My father lived life 24/7. 24/7. In fact, his wife and kids were second to the streets.
It sounds like it. If you're
kind of sad.
If you're gambling $30,000 a night, like, you're fucking living large. Like, yeah. You're just out there fucking. Yeah, you're not a fucking family man.
Yeah, there's no way.
No, you're just married and have kids, but like.
Yeah.
You're not a family man.
No, he's not.
He's a Gambino crime family man.
Gambino crime family man. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
John Gotti's brother, Peter, then took over as boss until 2011 with people as, like, capos, like, under him, you know, while he was in and out of prison, like, his underboss, like, stepping up, too. And then John Gotti died on June 10th, 2002 from throat cancer at the age of 61 while he was in a federal prison's hospital being treated with his cancer in Missouri. I know. R.I.P.
R.I.P. John Gotti.
So the Gotti family held a funeral for him at the local funeral home in Queens because they were banned from the DOCC of Brooklyn, like the funeral home, I guess, all the people went to, like all the mobsters, but they were banned. There were 200 attendees at his funeral, and he was buried at the St. John Cemetery, same place Neil's buried at, but next to his son. No, next to his son, Frank.
Okay.
R.I.P.
Frank.
And I can't remember if it was 200 to 300 or 200 to 3,000. I think it was like 2 to 3,000.
Oh, I'm sure.
During his funeral, people like just driving through the area, like paying their respects, like all of his local places. Like,
I'm sure if I had been there, I would have gone.
Yeah, I'm sure you would have.
Oh, totally.
And so John Gotti III.
Do I sound like a terrible person? I'm sorry.
No, I don't think you sound like a terrible person. I think, I don't know. I feel like this stuff is just so far off from reality. And that's like what we talked about the last one we covered. That it like is fascinating. I mean, it sucks that people die. But it's like, it's just a different like way of life that's fascinating. I don't think it's shitty.
It just
doesn't even sound real. Like when you were talking about the Alvin Karpis. Like it just didn't even sound real.
Right. Because it's totally alternate lifestyle for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of it sounded fucking real. Like, I don't live a life of crime.
No.
Like, I go to the fucking grocery store and I have to go to work. I'm not like sneaking into the back doors of the grocery store stealing my food. Like, I'm fucking at the counter paying for my food. When I go to restaurants, I don't like dine and dash. I'm not gambling $30,000 a night. I'm not on the street corners selling drugs and fucking lurking in the shadows from cops. You know, that's not my life.
No. And if you're gambling $30,000 a night, I don't think you're dining and dashing.
Yeah,
I think you're dashing while you're dining and being all fucking dapper and awesome.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't know. Sounds like they probably didn't take care of their servers, though.
So. It just seems glamorous. But again, because it seems
maybe
like
they did. I don't know. Because Hollywood it was like movie. A glamorous thing that like they took extra good care of their servers. I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems
like they were douchey.
It seems like Hollywood.
It does seem like Hollywood. Okay, so John Gotti III was arrested again when he got out of prison for murder and racketeering in Florida in 2008. But that case ended in a mistrial. And to wrap us up, I have some fun facts about John Gotti.
Okay.
He once sent one of his men to threaten Frank Sinatra after Frank Sinatra lied and said he was sick because he didn't want to go out to dinner with John.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, blue eyes, taking your life in your hands.
Yeah, no shit. He once lost $60,000 in a game of dice.
So that must have been an overnight game since it's $30,000 a day.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Or he averaged.
Arr,
I'm a pirate now, not a mobster. I get booty. I get treasure chests. No gambling for me. No selling drugs for me. No empire for me.
They're not actually selling drugs.
It's only me and me pirate ship.
And they're not actually selling drugs. At least the big guys aren't. They're just reaping the benefits.
No, I know.
Okay,
sorry. So he reportedly executed mobster Tommy DeSimone, and the inspiration in this, he was the inspiration for the character played by Joe Pesci in The Goodfellas, because DeSimone had assaulted another gangster's wife. So that's why he was killed. And he was once asked if he disliked being called Dapper Don, and he said, no, this is my public. They love me. His public. And during his final stint in prison, John offered $100,000 to one of the members of the Aryan Brotherhood to kill several former mob associates who betrayed him. However, then he was ratted out to the cops.
Fuckers.
I know. So it didn't go his way.
Yeah, but don't pay the Aryan Brotherhood.
Do you know who that is?
I do.
I don't know who that is.
Those are the white supremacists.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Well, he is white, so it makes sense.
No, he's Italian.
He's white.
His skin color is white, but white supremacists... Never mind. We're not even going to have that conversation.
Yeah. I try not to spend too much time diving into that kind of shit.
Yeah.
It's just depressing.
Like,
this shit doesn't depress me. I should, but it doesn't. It's like a palate cleanser for me. But yeah, no. I mean, all the lives that get lost are sad, but, you know... This is so, like, dystopian for me. I think that's why I'm interested in it. Mm-hmm. Same with you, because it's dystopian for us.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's all I got. What do you think?
Oh, my God. Did I not love it? Was I not fully engaged the entire fucking time? Sitting on the edge of my seat, kind of hoping it was going to be a two-parter.
Well, there's, like, 100 more parts to go here. But, I mean, John Gotti's story and Neil's story are relatively actually very small. Like, that was all the, like, big details I could find.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if like, of course, like I found like minor details, like they'll do like being called Dapper Don. No, this is my public. They love it.
Yeah.
You know, but no, they're relatively pretty short. I mean, I know there's like a lot of people under the Gambino family. Like I probably could have spent like way more time. I probably could have spent a whole episode on just the actual Gambino like name.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that would be its own thing.
But I mean, like, I dove into that. No, I just mean, like, Carlo and his, like, his brother or his wife or whomever, you know? Like, I could have probably spent a whole episode on just them.
Well, I'm grateful and I appreciate it.
I want to dive into all five and, like, members and do it all.
Yeah,
do it up.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. Well, I was just like, I know you're going to love this. And that's why I didn't even want to tell you what I was doing. But I figured that, honestly, everything that I was presenting to you, I was hoping that you didn't know some of it. But I figured, like, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew that. I knew about that. I knew about that. Because, you know, you're interested in this kind of stuff. And so I just assumed.
And John Gotti was, like, in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Like I said, I remember just seeing him on TV.
He was in my lifetime, too.
I remember seeing him on TV and seeing, like, People magazine and like all that kind of shit, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I got for you today, Mama.
I love it. Thank you.
I love it too.
You're the best.
It was fun to do.
Well, you can follow us on the gram at That's Disturbing Podcast.
Yeah. And if you felt so inclined, you could also give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. That would really help like move up our engagement.
And we got reviewed by a blog called The Feed Spot.
Yes. The Feed Spot. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you to The Feed Spot.
Yeah. That was
because
awesome.
I opened that email
and I was like, oh, this is like appearing to be kind of scammy. And then I read it and I was
or one of those send us money things.
Yeah. And then I immediately like ran to my mom. I was like, guess what happened?
What happened was, and it's the, like, it was their blog about the top 80 podcasts to listen to in 2024. And we're in there and we're top 80 disturbing podcasts to listen to in 2024. And we're in there and it's like worldwide.
And guess what? We're even before halfway. We're before number 40.
I'm flattered just to be nominated.
Yeah, me too. I was like, this is so fucking cool.
Right?
I was like, people know who we are.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. But yeah, you can follow us on Instagram at That's Disturbing Podcast. Send us a Gmail. That's disturbingpodcast @gmail.com. Again, we don't have a website anymore. Sorry, not sorry. But you can send us like any case you want us to cover. We have a few case requests actually that we're working on right now. Really stoked about those. But yeah, if you felt so inclined to give us a rating and a review, if you wanted to do 5 stars, that would be better and much appreciated.
Than less than 5?
Yeah, just remember, this is not anonymous feedback. We can call Sammy. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Don't take that threat too seriously.